Ecumenism, we're often told, is a one-way street. There's no going back. But has that journey now hit a dead end as far as Catholic relations with the Church of England are concerned? This stark warning is the way some observers are seeing a recent address by the Vatican's top ecumenical expert, Cardinal Walter Kasper. He was speaking at a private meeting of the Church of England's bishops discussing the ordination of women to the episcopate. Plus, are the Catholic Church's liturgy wars finally coming to a close? And behind the scenes in The Convent, the latest religious reality show hits Britain's TV screens this week. Well, here with more on all of those stories is our regular guest, Austin Ivory, Director of Public Affairs for the Diocese of Westminster. Austin, welcome to the programme.
Good to be with you.
I'd like to start with those recent remarks by Cardinal Walter Kasper. Now, I haven't seen much coverage of this story, but it really was a very dramatic warning about the future of Anglican-Catholic relations if the Church of England decides to go ahead with the ordination of women bishops.
It was very strong stuff indeed. I mean, Cardinal Kasper has been sounding these warnings with greater and greater emphasis. He gave a speech last year in Durham which said a lot of what's in here, but I've never heard such stark, straightforward language being used. He was invited to tell the Church of England House of Bishops exactly what the implications for our ecumenical relations would be if the Church of England, as it is planning to, proceeds towards the consecration of women as bishops. And Cardinal Kasper accepts the invitation and does say in a very, very straightforward way, simply, if this does happen, then we can no longer talk about the path of ecumenism, which was the path towards full unity and communion, which was launched by the Archic Process 30 years ago. Frankly, that will come to a halt. And then he says, of course, we will continue to have friendships, and we will continue to work together where we can, and pray for each other, and so on. But the big difference, he's saying, is that we would no longer be moving towards each other, but rather we'd be coexisting alongside one another. In other words, the relations with the Catholic Church and the Church of England would become very similar to the relations that the Catholic Church has with, you know, with Protestant churches in general. In other words, no effort ultimately to seek full communion, because the theological and ecclesiological differences are too stark.
And yet, as we all know, at least three of the world's Anglican provinces have already agreed to consecrate women as bishops. Why is he making these comments, do you think, particularly to the Church of England?
Well, this is, of course, a vital question. I mean, if members of the member churches in the Anglican Communion already have women bishops, then what's the big deal? Why should it be so different for the Church of England? But he addresses this exactly halfway through the speech when he says that the Catholic Church has always perceived the Church of England as playing a unique role in the Anglican Communion. And he gives various reasons for that. But ultimately he's saying it is the Church of England which exercises the role of koinonia, of communio, within the worldwide Anglican Communion. And therefore he says that that's why for us the Church of England is not simply one province among others. Its decisions have a particular importance for our dialogue and give a strong indication of the direction in which the communion as a whole is heading. So he's saying, he's accepting, of course, also, as he does earlier in the speech, that the Church of England voted for women priests, and there's obviously a logic in them proceeding to consecrate women as bishops. But what he then goes on to say, having conceded that, is that actually to consecrate a woman as a bishop, and the whole role of the bishop is, of course, central to the whole point about what a church is and the unity. In other words, unity is exercised by a bishop not just within his diocese but also with the church as a whole, and therefore to have what the Catholic Church would regard as illicit and invalidly ordained bishops would of course spell the end to the prospect of communion between the Catholic and the Anglican churches.
So what kind of reaction have you heard from either from the Catholic Church or from the Church of England regarding these comments? As you say, very strong comments.
I have to say muted. I mean, only the Times really, with its assiduous coverage of these things, gave it space. I'd say it passed largely unnoticed by the press as a whole. I think there's, you know, a broad acceptance here that actually what Cardinal Kasper is warning against has already happened. In other words, there's no, I think, great expectation. There's no great surprise, perhaps, in the Catholic Church saying this. I mean, for those of us who observe these things, there is a different note, a starkness in what the Vatican is saying to the Church of England. It's very interesting, actually, also to introduce another point here, which is that the Anglican Church, of course, faces this summer vital questions about its own communion, because because of the question of the membership of Accuser, the North American Episcopalians who ordained a gay man as a bishop against the warnings of the member church of the Anglican Communion. And the Tablet has a very interesting editorial this week, and I think this is absolutely spot on. He's actually saying that the message that Cardinal Casper is giving to the Anglican Church is really exactly the same message that most of the member churches, including the Church of England, are giving to Accuser. In other words, if you go ahead and do this, then you're breaking up the communion. So there's a kind of contradiction here with the Anglicans, and the Tablet asks very straightforwardly, can they demand that the American Church halts or reverses its moves towards homosexual bishops for the greater good of communio, while the Church of England dismisses an appeal from Rome over women bishops on the same grounds? Or to put it bluntly, the editorial ends, how do they say yes to women bishops and no to gay bishops?
Now, from divisions within the Anglican Communion to divisions within the Catholic Church over the translation of the Missal, this story that has been going on regarding the International Commission on English in the Liturgy, there have been some developments regarding the acceptance of that translation by not only the Church of England and Wales, but also the Church in Australia. And yet the difficulties seem to be continuing, particularly regarding the Church in the United States.
The Catholic Herald this week has a great splash on its front page. Deadlock broken over English Mass. Bishops of England and Wales approve revised draft. And a great picture of Cardinal Pell with his arms raised. And it says here, hail significant vote. Cardinal Pell, the chairman of Vox Clara, which is the oversight committee, making sure that the English-speaking bishops' conferences move forward in the approval of the revised translation of the Mass. Why is all this important? Well, because of what we, I suppose, loosely call the liturgy wars have been going on now for more than a decade. And it's very interesting. I mean, in many ways, the modern Catholic Church, particularly in the English-speaking world, divides over this question. It's the old thing of how faithful is the should the translation be to the Latin, and how faithful should it be to what's called enculturation or the local culture, is only one level of the debate. Underneath that, you've got also controversies over the role of Rome in all of this. And it's quite interesting, the Catholic Herald, which I think has been looking for a decisive intervention from Rome to make the Mass, you know, to make the translation of the Mass more faithful to the Latin, more Roman, if you like. And the Tablet has taken really the other view, which is that this is for local bishops to enculturate the language, and Rome has no right to interfere in this process. And of course, back in 1998, when ICIL, which is the commission of people appointed by the English-speaking bishops' conferences to make the translation, revised what is now the 73 translation, that 98 translation was rejected by Rome, which said, no, that's not faithful enough to the Latin. Then there was this new document introduced called Liturgium Authenticam, and this new translation is based on those principles. So this goes back quite a long way, this issue. Now, everybody's been anxious for this to be solved. We need a new translation. Cardinal Pell's been driving this forward in Vox Clara, and there are now expectations that by the end of the year we will have this new translation. However, even though the bishops of England and Wales, who were have been the first to approve the revised draft, the Australians have done so, but now it goes to the United States. Bishop Arthur Roach, chairman of ICIL, has been in the US this last week. And of course, the US bishops, who are much more divided over it, I have to say, than our own, it really does all now depend on whether they approve this revised draft, in which case I think it's green light. If they don't, however, it's as the Catholic Herald is saying quite well in its leader, we will probably have a continuation of the so-called liturgy wars for some time to come.
So from some very much in-church affairs, if you like, to a much more popular culture issue, the story that you've been following quite closely, haven't you? The question of the television programme, first of all, The Monastery, now we have The Convent, and we have an interesting preview of that in The Tablet this week. Tell us more.
Well, it's all great, but this is a Big Brother for Catholics. You know, you can despise Big Brother and celebrity, let me get me out of here, and all this kind of rubbish on TV, but you can love The Monastery and now The Convent. The Monastery last year was one of the great successes on the BBC, a three-parter, each one went out for an hour on BBC Two, got 3 million viewers, has changed the face of religious broadcasting. All the TV production companies want to do follow-ups and imitate this. But the basic format of the programme is you take young spiritual seekers, representative, emblematic, if you like, of modern young people, put them in a monastery for 40 days, and they follow very tightly the monastic routine and, you know, see what happens and how they develop. Well, it was done with the monastery. Just last week, by the way, there was the monastery reunion, which is when those five men got back together at Worth, just to sort of, you know, Worth Abbey, by the way, which is where the monastery was set, to discuss progress. And now, very shortly, in fact, in this week, on Wednesday night, we have The Convent, which is the follow-up, the female version, and an art, very interesting preview of it in the tablet by Sue Gaisford.
As you say, these are four ordinary women, four women from very different walks of life who come together at the Poor Clare's Convent in Arundel. And really, it's quite extraordinary the kind of transformation that takes place in these women's lives, according to this article.
This happens when you take people out of the hurly-burly of ordinary life. And of course, they themselves are looking for something. But one of the fascinations with what everybody would be looking for in the convent is, you know, how is it the same and how is it different? And how is it different for women and how is it different in this particular setting? I mean, it's interesting, Sue Gaisford says here that the series was entirely made by women, for women. You know, all the camera people were women and the sound equipment and so on. So no men came into the enclosure of the Poor Clare's Convent in Arundel in the south of England. And so this is really going to be a woman's world exposed. One of the differences that I think the women in this programme regress in a way perhaps that the men didn't, become more childish and more, Sue says here, two of them particularly display an irritating reluctance to put much effort into the experiment and behave in silly ways, smuggling in wine, sneaking off for cigarettes or racing electric wheelchairs through the garden. And then she says actually the nuns get quite exasperated with them and say, look, you know, you've got to take this seriously if you're going to get anything out of it. And the other observation that they make is, I mean, they say it's quite different from the monastery in the sense the monastery was filmed in the summer, Arundel in winter. At Worth, the visitors had their own separate house where they lived. At Arundel, they're right in among the nuns. So there are obviously these differences, but she says the most striking difference is that the seekers at Arundel, at the Poor Clare's, prove all to have been damaged by difficult and broken sexual relationships, whereas none of the men visiting Worth so much as mentioned the opposite sex. So there's, you know, while the men in the monastery were on their journey and had to expose their vulnerability, funnily enough, they didn't ever talk about relationships, where clearly the women in this programme are going to be talking at length about painful experiences in their past. And Sister Elred of the Arundel Poor Clares offers an observation, which is, I think, very interesting. She says, my experience of men is limited, but women seem to need to grapple with relationships while a lot of men don't go there. They find it too painful. They show their vulnerability in other ways.
And it seems that despite what one might think of perhaps of these sisters living in a very enclosed environment, not exposed to the problems of relationships and family life, somehow it seems that it's going to be a bit of a surprise the amount of insight they have into these women's relationships their problems.
I think this is the great value of these programmes, is that it opens up the world of monasteries and convents for millions of viewers who would regard them as very odd places where odd people live. And many people said that one of the great effects of the monastery was to realise just how normal, I mean, it's very patronising, is what people have been saying, just how kind of normal the monks were. And I'm sure that, I haven't seen the convent, but I'm sure it will reveal that these religious women really are full of wisdom and insight and articulate and, you know, and holy in the sense that's very recognisable by the world, compassionate, loving, you know, full of those things which if you like, show that the gospel really works.
BBC Two, 9 p.m, The Convent on Wednesday, June the 14th. For the moment, Austin, thank you. Thank you for being with us on today's programme.
Thank you.
Austin Ivory is Director of Public Affairs for the Archbishop of Westminster, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor.